Hills, Lord, and Camway.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Carrie Comptcarter here for the plaintiffs. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The issues before you are twofold. Did the trial court abuse its discretion in striking defendants' declarations? And secondly, under a de novo review, did it err in granting complete summary judgment dismissal of all claims for both plaintiffs?
Let me focus on that second issue, and I want to focus your attention on the summary judgment stage of this proceeding. Forget about the later motion for reconsideration. Okay. In your joint memo in opposition to the defendant's motion for summary judgment, you said with respect to the hostile work environment claim that the totality of the circumstances and undercurrent of humiliation and disdain for homosexuals that ended with the adverse employment action of wrongful termination is the basis of your hostile work environment. Do you agree?
Correct.
What specific evidence that was then in the record supports that claim with respect to your client, Coles?
With regards to Logan Coles in particular.
Hostile work environment. And you can anticipate right. The next question will be with respect to Lord.
Right. So with regards to Mr. Coles, we have all the declarations of the fellow employees that were submitted, and along with depositions, we had, I'm going to go blank now because I have them out of order, but there were three different employees that discussed, and even after the fact that the ultimate, as to the second question, Lord, the terminations didn't surprise her and that she assumed it was because of their sexual orientation. Each of the other employees, independent of defendant's own deposition testimony, clearly identified anti-gay jokes, including laughter by Ms. Bender to those homosexual jokes, to photographs of transgender, that the atmosphere was such that everyone watching what was happening to Mr. Coles, it was very clear he was being treated differently than all other non-homosexual employees there.
And with respect to the...
Mr. Lord?
Well, before we get there, with respect to the last part, you said the adverse employment action. I take it that it's part of your argument that there is some significance in the termination itself in March of 2011.
Correct.
That is part of this hostile work environment claim. Is that your position?
Correct.
Okay. Now, with respect to your client, Lord.
Correct. So with plaintiff Lord, the hostile work environment, to be frank, and I'll acknowledge, the only adverse employment action he began to suffer was when he went in that meeting to finally say on his own, and finally now under Ms. Bender, who is coming in at HR over him at that meeting, to say, I want an investigation, what happened to Mr. Coles and what is going on with Bender, because he'd been part of meetings throughout the fall of 2010, essentially accompanying Mr. Coles as to the concerns that were arising and escalating between Bender, who was in supervising. As to Lord, really, and he acknowledges, the contact direct to him was initial when Bender started in May 2010 with saying they didn't belong in the peer group meetings and making it so uncomfortable that he voluntarily removed himself from that, and targeting and treating Mr. Lord's breaks with Mr. Coles differently than breaks of any other. So the hostile work environment claim, I think we acknowledge with regards to Mr. Lord, while he was subjected to that same presence, because he was not under Ms. Binder until that ultimate HR meeting in May, he wasn't subjected to any contact directly from her other than those two events in May of 2010 with peer group and the breaks themselves.
So no, is it fair to say that then after May 2010, with respect to Lord, there was no further?
He was in a completely different, okay. He didn't have, barely had any interactions with Ms. Binder. His only involvement in September and October was basically a support and accompanying and trying to be a mouthpiece to help facilitate addressing these escalating issues with Ms. Binder and Mr. Coles.
Okay. Now let me turn your attention to the retaliation claim that is also the subject in your joint memo. You talk about your client Coles and that ultimate meeting that terminated, resulted in termination. Is there any evidence to suggest any evidence with respect to your other client? I'm sorry, I misstated that.
So Mr. Lord had the final.
Yes, meeting. I'm right. Sorry.
So with regards to retaliation for Mr. Lord, it's pretty blatant. Even defendant says he's a great valued employee. There's no performance issue at all. Goes in, boom, Bender's there, pulled out, fired as he's trying to address it. With Mr. Coles, again, remember, there's not even agreement whether he was fired or quit or walked off or was laid off. So even how he left is at dispute. But with Coles, what we have is clearly making availing, I'm having issues and trying to seek help. HR, then Ms. Binder takes over HR. He essentially feels like he has no one else left to go to. He's told of the adverse anti-gay comments by Ms. Binder in January. He's ill on the day in question and goes home ill. The record's clear. Even Mr. Cam Sohota, when he saw him, says, gosh, you guys look like, stay away. And then you see defendant giving multiple and conflicting reasons for the departure. We have an employee going home after clearly trying to avail himself of activity of seeking help and intervention and being singled out and treated differently in the eyes of fellow employees as well. And then he goes home sick, doesn't appear to be a problem, and it is following Cam defendant telling Mr. Lord in a different management position they're going to be cutting his hours due to financial reasons. They're going to be cutting Mr. Cole's hours due to financial reasons. They go home sick. Mr. Cam Sohota calls and says, hey, I need to meet with you off-site first. And then that turns into, we're going to fire you because you walked off the job. Then it turns to, from that back to terminated, laid off, fired, all because he left sick.
Thank you.
Glad I reserved 3 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jeff Fairchild representing Camway, the Sohotas, and Dory Binder. A quick word on timing first. Camway hired Coles in December 2008, Lord in spring 2009. They walked off the job 2 years later, and the lawsuit was filed on almost the third year anniversary of that departure. It's our position that Montoya Lewis's decision is thoughtful. It's absolutely correct under Washington law, and the court should affirm it. Let me start with the harassment.
And her decision addresses the merits of the claims.
Her decision addresses the merits of the claims, and the merits specifically of the harassment claim and the termination claims, which have been abandoned. So there is no briefing on the wrongful termination under 4960. There's briefing on harassment, and there's briefing on retaliation. The other claims, as a matter of law, have been abandoned. There's no citation. We're left to guess whether it's a direct evidence claim, whether it's a burden-shifting case. Those type of things have been abandoned. But let me talk about the harassment. The legal standards are clear.
You probably would best use your time by responding to what I just took counsel through in terms of whether or not there's a genuine issue of material fact.
And the answer, from our opinion, yep. is that there is not. And for the harassment claim, there are three standards. There are three thresholds that Lord and Quiltz have to get through. They have to establish that they experienced harassment at work, during the workplace, during their work time. It's not something they find out about later. It's something they subjectively have to have experienced. Number two, it has to be severe and pervasive enough to impact, to disrupt their work environment. And we see that Judge Montoya Lewis determined that they had not. And the third filter is
But the court's decision, as I read it, was turned on pervasiveness.
It was actually both. And so it was the pervasiveness was not sufficient to disrupt their work environment, but also was the complete lack of evidence as to anti-gay animus, which is the third threshold. And when you back away, what is speculation? What are general workplace disagreements? What is evidence that they found out about later that they did not subjectively experience while there? We're left with three possible allegations that have something to do with their sexual orientation. And Judge Montoya Lewis, she patiently listened to this. We don't have a countdown clock, unfortunately, in Whatcom County. There were two lengthy hearings. And what she concluded on the severity and pervasiveness elements is that we're not in the league of Wolfowitz. We're not in the league of Hotchkiss. We do not have a case where it's sufficiently severe or persuasive to sustain a harassment claim under Washington law.
And why isn't that a genuine issue material fact here?
For the same reason it wasn't in McDonald versus Quorum Ford or the Washington case or the Knight case, that when you have three incidents, one, a third party, when you get down to the admissible evidence, when you get rid of the speculation, when you get rid of the facts that they found out later, we have an email from a third party that says, yo, homo, that Cam inadvertently circulated to everybody and then apologized for. And then we have just two other very minor incidents. And when you compare that to Lofowitz, where that's the UW supervisor who called the employee a faggot, a queer, a gay. When you compare it to Hotchkiss, where there's a not only direct derogatory slurs and comments, but there's also enmeshed in that is a threat of violence. Those are the cases that survive summary judgment on harassment. The cases that have not are much closer to what we're talking about, but we're not even there.
Well, so what are those cases that you're wanting to
Well, I'd point to initially, I mean, we have the McDonald case, the McDonald Quorum 4, which sets a very high bar for this and also compares other cases where harassment's been allowed to go forward. But, you know, perhaps more interesting is Knight versus Brown, which is a Western District of Washington case where the employee was dealing with a difficult manager, someone that they did not particularly get along with. There was countermanding of instructions. There was exclusion from meetings. It's almost, it's very reminiscent of some of the allegations that we heard from plaintiff's counsel. There was.
One of the difficulties of looking at federal district court cases or federal cases is that they use a different standard on summary judgment.
Well, the legal part is the same. The legal standard for the harassment.
But the court is using a different standard to determine whether there are issues of fact.
You don't have to look at Knight. You can look at the McDonald case, which is a state case. And at that case is the car dealership where there were incidents of groping, there were incidences of inappropriate comments and all that, but it did not rise to the level of surviving summary judgment. And instructive in that case more than the case itself is this litany of other cases where it is enough. And we're not in the same neighborhood, and I think that's what Judge Montoya Lewis recognized on the severity and pervasiveness part of it. But there's other parts of this too, right? There is also her finding, which is accurate, that there's no connection to anti-gay animus.
Well, that's a prompt for one of the question I had here. Reading her opinion, it reads almost like findings of fact, when indeed it's a summary judgment motion and it's reviewed de novo, and we and both the trial court and we have to resolve all inferences in favor of the non-moving party.
Well, that's definitely true, but they have the obligation to present a prima facie case at the summary judgment stage. They can't just say we'll get around to it. They have to show that there's evidence of admissible evidence under the summary judgment standards of anti-gay animus, and there was not there. Instead, we have an employer that they admit no one at Camway directed any anti-gay slurs or derogatory language toward them. We have an employer, Cam Sahoto, that hired Lord knowing that he is gay and is a partner of Cole's. We have that same individual responsible for the terminations. We have that whole same actor issue. And we have Cam Sahoto inviting Lord back to try to encourage him to remain, which is hardly consistent with the actions of an anti-gay employer. So, yes, I mean, there are factual elements to Montoya Lewis's decision, but that's because it's summary judgment, and she, as she explicitly acknowledged, gave them every benefit of the doubt. But they have to tick the boxes. They have to establish, and it doesn't skip immediately to severity. It is, what did they experience? What is admissible? What is severe? And did it disrupt the work environment? And was it attributable to animus? And they're 0 for 4 on that. Not to mention, which I don't think should be forgotten, is we have a statute of limitations bar here. The bar is...
Now, the court denied summary judgment on that ground.
They certainly did. But
and you didn't cross appeal.
Well, we don't, with all due respect, need to do that.
Why not?
Because the Court of Appeals is entitled to affirm a trial court decision based on any grounds that is clear from the record.
But well, we don't know what record was before the court when it made that decision.
Well, we do know that there were no allegations, and we know from the briefing both below and now, that there were no allegations of a non-discreet harassing act within the statute of limitations. And that is part of the submissions before this court. and that is, in our humble opinion, a very clear legal issue. And that's the lesson of Morgan. That's the lesson that our Supreme Court adopted in Antonius. They have to point to a nondiscreet act of harassment that occurs within the statutory period, or they don't pass go. They don't get to those other factors we talked about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Quickly, Your Honors, you're discussing an opinion that the trial court made excluding and without the declarations of plaintiffs, and that is a critical determination that must be made because the plaintiffs, there was no Barnett analysis under this case at all by the court.
Well, counsel, we understand your argument about the motion for reconsideration, but my question is, and I would like to focus you at the motion for summary judgment stage, what the record was at that time. Is it your position that the record was inadequate to support a denial of summary judgment?
I made it clear in my declaration we had not been able to provide a complete response. And in particular, that I could not provide my plaintiff's testimony.
You're not answering my question. The record shows that there was never a request for a continuance of the summary judgment hearing.
Contrary to, actually, it was in my declaration, Your Honor.
Let me get the question out, and then you can provide an answer. My question is, with respect to the state of the record at the time of the motion for summary judgment, I take it you're not taking the position here that the motion for summary judgment should not have been granted on that basis of that record. And this is excluding anything that you tried to put in later.
Okay, if we limit solely to the motion that was put forth when the trial court denied, excluding the testimony of plaintiffs, I believe it was erroneous in dismissing. It was erroneous in dismissing retaliation and wrongful termination, and the court didn't even address emotional distress because it stated in its own opinion it was moot if the discrimination retaliation claims were dismissed. Even if the court found that there wasn't sufficient evidence upon which reasonable bias could differ as to sexual orientation discrimination, that does not foreclude the retaliation and the retaliatory termination. Those don't go hand in hand. You can still have the retaliation, and contrary to the representations put forth, the arguments or the claims of wrongful termination were never waived. It was in all the briefing at all three stages, including in our appeal to this court. So even if the court at that initial online says, you know what, I just don't see the pervasive, despite all the other employees seeing it, despite all the documentation, I don't see discrimination, there was still reasonable minds could differ that there was retaliation because there was clear ongoing discussions and attempts to address what they perceived that they were being singled out and treated differently. And so even then, the retaliation and the adverse employment action, which was the termination, which was clearly within the statute of limitation, which is why the trial court denied that motion, those issues should go to jury.